thank you for joining us again for another session of the Majesty of Torah. We started last week, and you know, this is the kind of topic that, you know, I wondered to myself, like, so, you know, what you know, there's so much to talk about. Like, what will the classes be? You know, well, last week we kind of took a fast tracking through. We spoke about the mystical, you know, mystical ideas of the development of Torah, from like the white light of Torah, from the primal Torah, all the way down to the physical Torah. And we talked about the fact that the Torah needs to be clothed with garments. The fact that Torah has to be able to be covered up in order for us to grasp it. That's what we spoke about. And obviously the point in these discussions is not only for us to get some, you know, more information on the greatness of Torah and so on, but it's actually to develop some sort of conceptual, I hope it will become a framework, conceptual mindset of the greatness of Torah. Because like we emphasized last week, Mia? Okay. Go sit down over there.
Yeah.
Okay. Like we emphasized last week, there's no way for us to transit from Pesach to Shavuot with a sense of we're coming to Shavuot, Torah is wonderful, but it has to be nurtured. That idea needs to be nurtured. It needs to be developed. It needs to be like, you know, cultivated. Otherwise, we arrive at Shavuot, and Shavuot will be. It'll be a nice Yom Tov. It'll be wonderful, but we have to have some deeper aspect into what is the Jewish year about? What's the cycle that we're living? To be in touch with the spiritual progress and development, the railroad tracks between Pesach and Shavuot, and what that is, very simply, is to develop an appreciation for Torah. That we're thankful, first and foremost, we're thankful for the fact that we received the Torah from Hashem. What is the Torah? That's what this class is about. It's discussions on why is Torah so wonderful? Why is it so immense? Why is it so great? That's really, and these are just a few discussions about that very tremendous topic. To live a life as a Jew without having these, the feelings, you know, the understanding, but also the affective, if we call it the affective domain, the feelings, the emotions, the attachment to Torah, that is certainly not what Jewish life is about. Jewish life is about an emotional attachment to Torah. So that might be easy for someone who might be sitting and studying all day, or for half a day, or once a day. Not all of us have that opportunity. But even those of us that don't do any other studying, let's say during the day, we study once a week, or twice a week, or we listen to a lecture, or we, whatever it is, we come to this class, we listen to a Dvar Torah, we try to get some inspiration somewhere. Nevertheless, each person is capable of developing a love for Torah. It's something that is on a basic level, from understanding the stories of the Torah, the mitzvahs of the Torah, to something that's even more sublime, to a feeling of, I want to reach out, I want to hold the Torah, I want to kiss the Torah, I want to connect with Torah values, I want to live a life of a wholehearted life, I want to have a relationship with Hashem. All those sort of feelings, those deep-rooted feelings in each one of us, that is what we're talking about in terms of appreciating Torah. Torah is much broader, right? It's much broader than just the study of Torah. It's the appreciation and the love for Torah. So we're going to continue a little bit more on the path we took last week, which is appreciating a little bit the inside of the Torah, understanding that there's an inner light, understanding there's something deeper. But I'm trying, though, to bring it down more and more and more to our level. So we're going to start with reading the first reference from the Derech Hashem, something that we've studied as a group here, the Derech Hashem. And over here he's going to describe what are the essential elements when you study Torah, or when you think about Torah, when you relate to Torah, when you try to emulate Torah life. What are the two essential elements to connecting with Torah? Now he's actually talking about Torah study, but it literally relates to each and every one of us in a Torah lifestyle. And there are two things that are absolutely essential. And one is a reverence for Torah, a respect and awe for Torah. The Torah is something awesome, and that's something that we're trying to cultivate in these discussions. And the second is to understand that hand in hand with Torah, not necessarily second, it could be even first, is the refinement of one's character. Developing a more refined and refined character and constantly maintaining that. The truth is he's going to mention it second, but it doesn't necessarily come second. It comes first. He's just bringing things down from a higher level, down and down, lower and lower to our level. Okay. So we're reading part of the Derech Hashem. He says the following: in order to have its desired effect, study of Torah must conform to two conditions. Now again, he's talking about study of Torah, but it relates to each and every aspect of developing a Torah lifestyle as well. Not all of us are sitting with a Chumash or a Mishnah, the Gemara, the Zohar, the Kabbalah, the Maharal, the whatever you want it. We're not sitting with Jewish texts and studying. Not all of us are doing that. Some of us are listening to a lecture. Some of us have the opportunity once in a while. We don't all have that. It's great if we do. But we're talking about a Torah framework, a Torah mindset. There are two conditions necessary. These are reverence for the study itself and the constant rectification of one's deeds. The only reason why Torah has any power at all is because Hashem bound His most precious influence to it, making it dependent on the Torah. So Hashem's taken this light that we spoke about, and Hashem has instilled it into the study of Torah. It is for this reason that reciting and comprehending it can transmit this influence. He goes on to say over there that it could be that science and, you know, mathematics, you know, language, they all can give accurate and valuable information. It's accurate, valuable, important information. But the Torah would be just the same thing. It would be some history book with some interesting information if it wasn't that Hashem instilled His influence, His light into the Torah. So what makes the Torah unique is that Hashem is in the Torah. That's why it's unique. We can have a discussion about policy making in Washington over health reform, or we could talk about the laws, any laws or anything that is going on in the news, you know, that's accurate, that's important information. And the Torah would be no different. We talk of laws of damages, laws of divorce and marriage, tells you some history, it tells you some things about the future, all kinds of interesting information, which secular media would provide the same input. But the difference is that we know that Hashem instilled His influence into the Torah. That's what's different. When you hold a sacred Torah, when you hold a Gemara, or when you hold any English book, any non-Hebrew, you know, original text, which has Torah information, it has the influence of Hashem in it. There's a spiritual influence in it that's not in any other book. It is the highest and most important of all concepts transmitted and conveyed by Hashem to man. Because of this fact, it is imperative that one should have reverence and awe when involved in Torah. What one is then doing is approaching Hashem and involving himself in the transmission of the great light from Hashem to himself. The individual involved should therefore be abashed by his human lowliness and tremble before Hashem's loftiness. I mean, that sentence hits us somewhere and says, oh, I don't feel so comfortable. The fact that we talk that we're lowly and Hashem is great, that's exactly the point. The point is that we need to work on that particular point and realize ourselves in context. He should rejoice in what he can attain, but even this should be combined with the greatest possible awe. The New York Times we're not going to approach with great awe and trepidation. But when we open any Torah text, or we listen to a Torah lecture, whatever it is, we have to realize that inside here, there is an investment. Hashem invested his great light of Torah in there. And when I study that, I just think about it. I say the words, I try to internalize the message, then I'm actually investing myself. I'm becoming the funnel for that great light, which is in the Torah, into my neshama. And that's why the awe is important. This connects to what we talked about last week. Last week we spoke about, if you recall, we spoke about that the Torah has garments over it. And you can't connect to the, if you will, the raw Torah inside without the garments. Does anyone remember? Do you remember what the garments were? Yeah. Right? Stories, the mitzvos, right? Any circumstances that are talked about in the Torah, all the case laws, anything about any of the concepts, the Torah is way above that. Meaning the Hashem's influence is way above that. But Hashem, in a sense, stretched down and put his life inside the most basic discussions. Hashem made that his wisdom. That's an amazing thing. And that's why, in order to connect to it, if we approach it like the New York Times, right, if we approach it, maybe with the New York Times we have an odd preference for, but if we approach it like the latest novel, you know, and that's what we're connecting with in the Torah, then we have to have a reverence for it, because it's the inside of the Torah which we're trying to connect with. So just to hold the Torah by the garments, or to, if you will, hold the Torah without the garments, to just sit down and say, oh, okay, so Torah says this, Torah says that, you know, just to kind of grope the Torah, just to feel like what the raw Torah is, we're not really connecting with the inside. The way to connect with the inside is to realize that everything that we're talking about is really a casing for something that's inside. So that reverence turns everything that we're studying into a casing, realizing there's something much deeper inside. I need to get to the core. I want to get deeper and deeper to the core. The value of a person's study and level of resulting influence vary according to the degree of his reverence and the measure of his respect and attentiveness. So one of us, we all could be studying Torah, each one's having a totally different experience based on how we approach the Torah. One of us could be sitting with the most, it's joy, it's exciting, it's engaging, but it's with a reverence, it's with an appreciation, it's lofty, it's on a pedestal. It's not something that we just sit down and, you know, just chit-chat about. It's something that's lofty and great and powerful and awesome and divine. That's a much more amazing experience, tremendous, tremendous experience. So this is just, here we are talking about creating a mind frame before Shavuos. How more important is it for us to realize that every time we study Torah, literally every single time, how we approach Torah? If we take one thing from all these four discussions that we're going to have between Pesach and Shavuos, to prepare ourselves for learning Torah, it's just an appreciation for the reverence of Torah. Mm-hmm. That itself is the most amazing, that will just lift every Torah experience that we have from now on, it will take it to such a higher level because we'll appreciate the greatness of Torah. Okay. Yes, Alex.
When we think about Torah, should we immediately think about Hashem, because Hashem created the Torah? Does Torah have life of its own? Was it created once in its complete shape, content, and it's not need to be sustained? Everything that Hashem created needs to be sustained. In first, now it's sustained every day, every moment. What about Torah? Is it something that's not need to be sustained? Is it has life of its own, or it still has connection to Hashem?
Right. Okay. Something around that does.
I have problem formulating exactly, but some of the points.
I mean, there's no question whatsoever that every single thing, the only thing that is one and that is the true existence is Hashem. The Torah, as lofty as it is not Hashem Himself. Right. So obviously, the Torah's existence, even the most primal Torah, you know, the highest form of wisdom of Torah, meaning not the weak thing, meaning the great mystical white light that the way above their Torah is still not Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Himself, right? So everything in existence is not a true existence other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu Himself, right? But the Torah is in Hashem's company. Is the closest thing to Hashem. That primal Torah, so to say, is in Hashem's company. For example, the Gemara teaches that, the Gemara talks about, what does Hashem do during the day, so to say? How does He divide His time, right? It's obviously all allegorical, but it says the first 3 hours Hashem is studying Torah, you know? So the Torah is Hashem's, like, play. Hashem's engaged in the Torah. Hashem's engaged and involved in the Torah. So Torah is like the closest thing in like Hashem's lap, so to say. The Torah, you know, but obviously the Torah itself needs to be sustained. It sounded like you were saying something else also. Is the Torah like a one-time creation? Or is it an ongoing creation?
Exactly.
Right? Well, so, in terms of is the Torah ongoing or not, so that's really, it's too high of a question for me to be able to answer, but my take on it is that, let me share with you a Gemara that might help me answer your question. So the Gemara, there's a famous Gemara, it's a story, it says Gemara in Menachos. The Gemara tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Hashem to receive the Torah, so one of the many things that Moshe Rabbeinu experienced is that Hashem was sitting, so to say, and Hashem, these are all figurative, obviously, Hashem was sitting and he was tying crowns onto the letters, right? He was tying these on the shin, he was tying a crown, and on the ayin, he was tying a crown, and on the Zion, he was tying a crown. Hashem was tying crowns on letters. And Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, Hashem, who's stopping you from just giving the Torah the way it is? Why do you have to get involved with tying knots? It's like, you know, if you send a gift to a friend, so then you send it with a bow on top, you know, it has to be all decorative, has to be beautiful. But who's stopping Hashem? So let's say Hashem just gives the Torah without crowns. Is anyone going to reject it and give it back and say, it's not perfect? You know, well, what's the point? What is that point? And Hashem said to him, there's going to be a person in the future, Akiva ben Yosef, it's appropriate to mention the Gemara now during the Sefira, Akiva ben Yosef, he's going to, Rabbi Akiva, he's the one that's going to expound on the crowns of the letters. Right? So Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to see who he was. I'll go through the details of the story. So Hashem kind of teleported him into the future and put him in Rabbi Akiva's base medrash. And Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting in the eighth row. The students used to sit according to their wisdom. And the students, they would sit all the way up front, near the teacher, near the master, near the Rebbe. So that was, those were the wisest. Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting in the eighth row. And Moshe Rabbeinu could not understand what Rabbi Akiva was talking about. And Moshe Rabbeinu got very upset. He didn't know what is Rabbi Akiva speaking about. I can't even understand what Rabbi Akiva is speaking about. Suddenly, Rabbi Akiva said, they asked him, he was saying all these explanations about the letters and about deep secrets of the Torah, and his students said to him, Rabbi, how do you know that? Right? Didn't have the Maharal then. How do you know it, right? Where, no Zohar, where is it from? So Rabbi Akiva said, Halacha la Moshe Misina. It was given to Moshe at Sinai, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu was comforted, right? It was given to Moshe at Sinai. So Moshe Rabbeinu came back to Hashem, without getting into all the details, but etc. Explore the story in Menachos, page 29. So the question is, like, what was going on over there? The answer is, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Maharsha, I think, explains, Moshe Rabbeinu himself originally felt that no one's going to be able to understand the depths of the crowns of the letters. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's question. Meaning, Hashem, you have a Torah to give, right? So you're going to give us the whole Torah. But the crowns on the letters, how are we ever going to be able to expound the meaning of the crowns on the letters? So in that, Hashem said back to him, there's someone who's going to be able to do that. So Moshe Rabbeinu, then when he arrived, he was dumbfounded. He didn't know, like, I can't understand it. You know, so it's my limitation. It's not a human limitation. It's my limitation that I can't understand it. Here. But originally, Moshe Rabbeinu thought it was a human limitation. No human being is going to understand it. But then when Moshe Rabbeinu arrived, he realized Rabbi Akiva understands it. It's my limitation. I don't understand it. But when Rabbi Akiva said, where did he know it from? Halacha l'Moshe Misinai. So Moshe was comforted. Why was he comforted? Not because the reason you and I would be comforted. That, oh, okay, so it came through me. Okay, you know, it's okay. That's not the reason Moshe Rabbeinu was comforted. Moshe Rabbeinu, the most humble person, if we're going to speak about it, that's not why he was comforted. The reason Moshe Rabbeinu was comforted was because he realized that it's beyond human capacity. It is beyond human capacity. But Hashem gave a gift of extra. Hashem, like, you know, filled us up with Torah, stuffed us with Torah, beyond our capacity, even more than we can comprehend, for us to be able to absorb. Right? So, there is a Torah up there. It's living in the sense, so that's my answer to your question. It's living in the sense that it's there, it's all there. It's for us to exert ourselves to our utmost to extract deeper and deeper understanding of Torah. So in that sense, it's living. In some generations we get a deeper understanding, then perhaps it's forgotten in some generations, it's restored in other generations, and we keep kind of feeling deeper into the Torah and, you know, understanding more and more, and some things are lost perhaps forever until Mashiach comes, and Mashiach will teach a level of Torah that was not known to anybody since, like, what Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Torah. So in that sense, it's living, right? But everything that the Gemara also says, that everything that was given in the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai. So Moshe Rabbeinu was given all that information. It's living in the sense that we continue to probe deeper, to try to understand more of what's there. So for us it's a living document, but in reality, I think perhaps the answer would be, and I don't have the complete answer, but it seems like the answer is that it's not really a living document in the sense that by Hashem, the whole Torah is there. Hashem is engaged in the Torah.
So all crowns have been written by Hashem.
Yes, all the crowns, and all the meaning is there, and it's to be expounded upon, and to be informed. Another way to look at it is that every time we expound in the Torah deeper and deeper levels, that actually creates the Torah. There's different ways to look at it. The Nefesh HaChaim speaks about how to look at that. Okay, so that's, I mean, that's another little discussion about the enormity and the grandeur of Torah, the majesty of Torah, yeah, the greatness of Torah, really, the how lofty it is. Let's transition to the next point. So it's so lofty. This is where we need to get a little bit more. It's very lofty ideas, but it's relevant to each and every one of us. I summarized a few of the points that the Maharal of Prague makes in his work, Tiferes Yisrael, chapters 21 and 23. One of the points is that Torah is a medium between Hashem and humanity. Very basic point. But if you think about it, what we are saying is the very point we just said, that there's Hashem and there's us. No connection whatsoever, so to say. Hashem and us, I mean, we're creations, Hashem's the creator, but there is an intimate connection. The interface of Hashem and us is through the Torah. To make a short remark on that, when Hashem gave the Luchos, when Hashem gave the tablets to Moshe Rabbeinu, so the rabbis teach us that Hashem was holding on to one part, and Moshe Rabbeinu was holding on to the other part, and there was a interface of space that was not grasped onto, so to say, by Hashem nor by Moshe. Right? And Moshe Rabbeinu was able to grab hold of the tablets away from Hashem. That's what we're taught allegorically. What does that mean? The Maharal explains that the Torah is, the body of Torah is the interface between Hashem and the Jewish people. Humanity, but more specifically, the Jewish people. And we have a tremendous yearning to receive, to get the Torah. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu's desire and yearning to connect with Hashem and to get from Hashem overpowered Hashem's will, so to say, to give the Torah. That's how great. That's what we say at the end of the Torah. L'chol hayad ha-chazaka. That Moshe Rabbeinu had a strong hand. What strong hand? The Moshe Rabbeinu was able to grab the luchos away from Hashem. The point being that there's like a no man's land between what Hashem grasps onto, that's the upper Torah that we're talking about, and what we grasp onto, which is, if you will, the lower Torah in this world, the Torah that we study. But there's a interface between these vast, you know, distance between the two aspects. There's an interface in between, and the Torah permeates all the levels of creation down to us, and we are interfacing, so to say, with Hashem's giving of the Torah through the Luchos and through the Torah that we study. Please skip to the bottom of the sheet. Look at this amazing thing I just learned today. I wanted to share with you. Moshe's name is particularly descriptive of his elite prophetic rank. So Moshe Rabbeinu, we'll get into more details, that he's the one who, through him, the Torah is given. I'm just going to stand up, don't mind. So Moshe's name is spelled Mem, Shin, and He. Right? How many letters are in the Hebrew alphabet? All you Hebrew, native Hebrew speakers and Hebrew studiers. How many do we have? 22 letters. Plus, how many final letters do we have?
Five
final letters. So in total, there are 27 letters. Right? So if you take the alphabet, the 27 letters. What is the middle letter of all that? So we need the 14th letter. Right? Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, Chet, Tet, Yud, Chaf, final Chaf, Lamed. What's the 14th letter? Mem. Mem is the 14th letter. It's the middle. The Hashem Moshe Rabbeinu's name is descriptive of his role in giving the Torah. The letter Mem. Let's talk about the letter Mem. It's the middle letter. Yes? Yeah? The middle letter. So in Mishlei, and in Devarim, in Mishlei it tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to soar very, very high and come down. The greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu is that he was able to go up this tremendous thing. If we understand the greatness of such an existence, being able to go so high, to enter, like if you will, the upper spiritual realm, to where Hashem was able to give him the Torah, and nevertheless be able to descend to give the Torah. That's an enormous, you know, like you talk about, you know, the greatness of some people. They say that as leaders, as though they're great leaders, you know, they'll speak to, you know, so-and-so on the street, you know. If the mayor goes down to, you know, downtown, you know, and he speaks to the homeless on the street, that's, oh, he's a great person, you know. And Moshe Rabbeinu, not to compare him to the mayor of any city, but Moshe Rabbeinu soared so high, and yet he was able to come down and give the Torah, right? That itself is the letter Mem. That means Moshe is, in a sense, if you will, he's a middleman, right? He's the balance between the most supreme and yet the very earthly, the below, which is actually the very message of Torah. Torah is given to be lived. Torah is called Chaye Olam. It's the life. It's a life that we live in our life. It's not some conceptual model only, but it's something very sublime, but something very concrete, halacha, down to earth, practical, applicable, right? Relates to my kishkas, you know, the way I feel. It connects, right? That's the letter Mem. What about the letter Shin? Shin is almost the very last letter of the alphabet, as we know, right before Taf. And the Pasuk in Tehillim says, for those of us that say Tehillim, we would know it from Perek Chet. It says, "Vatachsarehu me'at me'lohim," and you diminished him, and you let him be deficient, just a bit below a malach, a Elohim. Over there means you made Moshe Rabbeinu Hashem. You made him nearly perfect. He was a level below an angel, so to say, Moshe Rabbeinu. So the letter Shin describes the very, very extreme lofty level of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the Shin. And what's the Hay? The Hay says the Maharal. I would have said something else. The Maharal says that the Hay, there's five classifications of life on planet Earth, if you will. There's the most basic elements. That's one. Then there are composites, different elements that form together. Then we have the inanimate. We have the inanimate includes the organic. Then we have living creatures, and then we have a human being, the fifth level. So the fifth level represents the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is in the physical world. He's the highest form of a human being in the physical world. Okay? He's, meaning, as a human being, he's at the top of the hierarchy on the planet, right? So he's letter A. Why do we depict him specifically in the context of the hierarchy of things? Because we're talking about that Hashem came down to give the Torah to humanity. So we look at the lowliness of the world. So Moshe Rabbeinu, as a human being, he's on the fifth ranking of the lower element. Right? So you put together the letter Mem, and the Shin and the Hay together represent the very high level, but yet the fact that he's physical. And that combination, specifically, the Mem, Shin, and Hay are all depicting together the fact that there's an interface between the very lofty to the very low. And that's Moshe Rabbeinu, and that is what the message of the Torah is. And that's why, that's, we're going to talk more about what Moshe is. That's just like a shell. But that shell represents the whole entity of the Torah, which is the interface between the high and the low. Okay, that's very conceptual. But down to earth, as we are developing a sense, or trying to cultivate a sense, a context, towards Shavuot, and in general, in life, about the appreciation for Torah, on one hand, we all need to have a tremendous reverence for the superiority of Torah as a tremendous divine, you know, light. But on the other hand, we need to also realize how concrete and applicable it is to our everyday life. It is like Moshe Rabbeinu. That's how the Torah is. Both of them are awesome points. The fact that it's all the way up there is awesome. But the fact that it's also all the way down here is tremendously awesome as well. And the fact that it's both at the same time is magnificent. That is what Torah is. It's all the way up there, and it's all the way down here, and it's relevant in the highest levels to the lowest levels. It's sort of what they say about the study of Rashi. When you learn the Chumash with Rashi, a child in second grade in our day school studies Rashi. And yet, the greatest sages of Israel ever, in the last 1,000 years at least, studied Rashi, right? And Rashi's commentary is magnificent. There's so much depth in it, right? That's what they say about the greatness of Rashi. And that is what Torah is about. That's really what a Torah personality is about. To be a Torah's personality, you have to be a person who can hover and float into the spiritual, but also be grounded in the practical applications of life. Kol Talmud Chacham She'ein Bo Das Nevela Tova Hemenu. Any Torah scholar who doesn't have concrete knowledge, there's other things that are better than him. You know, it's a person who's only in the conceptual and not in the practical framework of what does it mean to live the Torah life, that is not Torah. On the other hand, Lo Amar Etz Chassid. If a person is not knowledgeable, right? A person is not knowledgeable, he won't become very pious. The more knowledge and concept that we develop, the more we have an affinity to the sublime nature of the spiritual of Torah. Right? So we need both. We need absolutely both. That is what Torah is. Torah is incomplete if it's just in the sky, and it's incomplete if it's just on the ground. Right? Amazing. It's amazing. It's truly amazing if you think about it. The whole covenant of Hashem with us as Jewish people is through Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And the whole covenant with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov is only through the land of Israel. It's through the land of Israel. If you look through the whole Sefer Bereishit, about 20 times, it's about through the land of Israel. Right? I'll give you this land. If you stay in this land, I'll be your God. If I'm in this land, I'll be your God. Don't leave the land. Leave the land. Don't leave the land. Come back to the land. You know, it's all about the land. So this very lofty relationship is grounded on planet Earth in a specific location that has to be living the laws of the Torah. Very, very basic, but very, very important. I think some of us sometimes, definitely speaking about myself, sometimes we're too much in the conceptual, or sometimes we're just too in the basic. Like, I don't want all the just tell me topics, you know, what's the halacha, this way or that way, you know? Just tell me, you know, how do I take care of my kitchen? How do I kosher my kitchen? Don't tell me, I don't want to know what the Torah says about it. Just tell me. Microwave, you know, do I put in a glass bowl, 5 minutes, like, okay, fine, finished. You know, like, no, but what am I doing? I'm living a refined life. You know, I'm living a life of separation of parts, and I'm realizing there's an order to the world, and you know, there's a God that gave them mitzvah. It's much more. Living a kosher life is much more than that, right? So it's both. We need to live both. And that's part of the reverence for the Torah. And I suspect that we're almost out of time. Is it 9?
Yes.
Rachel?
Yes.
9 o'clock?
Yes.
Okay.
3 minutes.
Okay. We'll keep part of the other stuff for later. We'll have a concluding thought. Okay. You asked for it. So I brought the Zohar with me, of course. Don't leave home without it. Okay. So there's a famous midrash, and I want to. A lot to build on this point, but I'm really going to cap it at a few minutes. The Zohar is a massive work, and there's an introduction of the Zohar written by the author of the Zohar. Presumably Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who wrote the Zohar. And there's a famous midrash in the beginning of the Zohar, that when God created the world, he invited all the letters came before him. All the letters of the alphabet, in reverse order, came before Hashem and said, create the world with me. You may have heard of this midrash before. the Taf came before Hashem, and the Shin came before Hashem, and so on, all the way down. And I didn't study the whole introduction of the Zohar, obviously, but all the letters come before Hashem, and each one has a claim why they should be the ones to begin the Torah, and Hashem should create the world with that letter. And obviously, ultimately, the letter Bet, as we know, begins the Torah, Bereshit. The Torah begins with a Bet. So, after that, there's silence. The letter Bet is over. The letter Bet doesn't say anything. Hashem calls out to the letter Aleph. So Aleph stands up, but it doesn't come before Hashem. And Hashem calls the letter Aleph. Aleph, Aleph, why aren't you coming in front of me like all the other letters to ask me if I should create the world with you? You should be at the front. I see all the letters came. Why didn't you come? So Aleph said, listen, I see all the other letters, Taf through Gimel. They all came in and they left pretty much unsuccessful. What can I do? I'm not going to come in. They all failed. Oh, and the letter Bet? Well, I know you're not going to take away from you're not going to take away from one of your loyal servants, the letter Bet. You're not going to take away what you gave that one and give it to another. So, Gimel through Taf, you know, Taf through Gimel, forget it. I'm not going to, they failed, I'll fail too. And the letter Bet, you know, you're not going to take it away. So Hashem said, no, Aleph, Aleph, you know, and there's a reason why it's repeated, Aleph, Aleph, even though I created the world with the letter Bet, don't think that I don't have a special relationship with you. Like I am the one and only, so to Aleph, you represent one, you represent the one and only, Aleph. And therefore, when Hashem spoke at Har Sinai, Hashem started his statement, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, with the letter Aleph. Anochi, Aleph Nun Chaf Yud. I am the one and only. Without getting into, obviously, at all, the Kabbalistic aspects of it. But what's explained over here, in the footnotes on the Zohar, is the following idea. Hashem is the one and only. All the other letters wanted to represent Hashem. They were unsuccessful. The letter Bet, without getting too Kabbalistic, the letter Bet represents a forward-facing letter, right? It has a back tail, right? But it's a forward-facing letter. It says, look forward, don't look back. Look from here on, meaning you don't have anything to do with what happened before creation. But there is a connection to what happened before. And it represents this world, right? But the Aleph is not excluded. What is the Aleph? The Aleph is that unique connection that the Jewish people have with Hashem, or that humanity has with Hashem, that goes beyond the Torah. That means, let's say we violate the entire Torah. We're worthy of destruction, and so on. Yeah? We totally should be annihilated. Nevertheless, we do tshuva. Tshuva goes even beyond the Torah. It goes up to the letter Aleph. Aleph represents that singular connection that goes beyond Torah. So too, and this will conclude, so too, the Torah that's given is given through an individual, Moshe Rabbeinu, who represents the intermediary, the interface between Hashem and the entire creation. He's like the letter Aleph. And all of the transmission of Torah goes through him. It's a very deep concept, but the idea that we should take from it, I could continue with it next time, but the idea that we have to take from that is that every single person has the potential to actualize all their abilities in Torah, in their Torah lifestyle, in their Torah study, in their Torah leadership, in who they are. Every single person can actualize themselves like Moshe Rabbeinu, that through them, they will be that singular connection. Like many of us have had people in our lives that make that singular connection for us. That even when all else fails, we remember that one individual, that's the Aleph, that's representative of the Aleph. So each one of us has that power, and that is a little bit of the concept and the concept of the connection between Hashem all the way above with an Aleph and then all the letters that follow after that.